Welcome to the Agency Profit Podcast, a show dedicated to going deep space on agency operations, which is just as nerdy as it sounds. I'm your host, Marcel Petipoff. I'm the CEO of Parakeeto, a firm that helps digital and creative agencies measure and improve their profitability. Join me as I interview some of the smartest thought leaders and agency owners in our space and go deep into operations, metrics, and all the other things you need to get right so you can spend less time worrying about operations and more time executing on your vision. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Agency Profit Podcast. I'm very excited today to be joined by a very interesting entrepreneur, somebody that took discarded materials from a cricket facility, sold it as sports memorabilia, started a successful agency, and scaled and systemized his way out of the day-to-day operations, and now helps thousands of businesses around the world build systems in their business, and is the author of the best-selling book, Systemology. So with all of that, David Jennings, thank you for making the time to be here today.
An absolute pleasure. I'm looking forward to the episode.
Yeah, me as well. So I'm really fascinated with the concepts of your book. Before we get into unpacking the core concepts behind Systemology, I'd love to learn, you know, who you serve and what you do for them.
I serve small business owners. Typically, once they've got a little bit of traction, they've got a small team around them, anywhere from sort of five up to about 40 staff. And they're finding that the business owner is still very much the bottleneck. They're in all parts of the business. They're serving clients and they're doing the marketing and they're doing the sales and they're in operations and HR and management. So they're a little bit everywhere and they've just built this business that's very heavily dependent on them. And then what I look to do is help to duplicate their best practice and delegate tasks down so they can get out of the day-to-day operations.
And so I think a common experience for a lot of folks running a small business, or especially the ones that are doing it and scaling to new levels for the first time. How did you figure out that this was a problem that you wanted to build a business around solving?
I had a digital agency in Melbourne called Melbourne SEO Services, and I ran that business with me in the operations for about 10 of those years. And not only was I suffering this problem myself, but you know what it's like in agency land when you're working very closely with your clients, you see all of their problems, and it was a consistent recurring theme for me. And then once we started to solve it for ourselves, then I started to realize they actually became infinitely better clients if we could help them improve the deliverables that we needed from them through process. So we would show them how to improve their process. And then we found out we were pregnant, and I took some time off, and that's when I realized I fell out of love with the digital agency world. And I was just kind of reevaluating what I was going to do. And I thought, you know what? I had a lady at the time, because when we fell pregnant, I promoted someone up to the CEO position to run the day-to-day. And then I thought, oh, do I really want to go back into agency land? No. Well, what do I want to do? And then that's when I thought, hey, I've got this knack here. I've done this a couple of times now. And I thought, well, how do I bottle this up and then show others how to kind of do the same?
Mm. So therein lies the impetus for the book, Systemology. And so let's unpack for a moment, what are kind of some of the key symptoms that somebody might be feeling that tells them that they might benefit from the frameworks that you put together in that book?
One of the big telltale signs is just the key person dependency in your business, whether it's you specifically, or maybe you have certain team members that if something happened to them, the work would grind to a halt or just not happen. Maybe if Sally doesn't come in on Tuesdays to issue out invoices, then no invoices go out and they wait until Sally's back in later in the week. If you've got areas like that throughout your business where core functions don't happen, and if someone is not there, or your business just doesn't function without you there, that's a really big telltale sign. Another one is you reach almost like this glass ceiling, because when you get very key person dependent, there's a capacity to each of those key team members. And once you reach that capacity, it's actually very difficult to move the business past a certain level. So that's another telltale sign. There's little things like that where, depending on what the key skills are for the business owner as well, that oftentimes tends to be a very heavy bottleneck in the business, or sometimes where the business owner, they might not even notice it consciously, but they can self-sabotage certain activities that they have because they know, ooh, if we sell more clients, that's going to equal more pain for me down the line when it comes to onboarding staff and delivering. So subconsciously, they can push leads away and make them jump through more hoops and make it harder for them to get in the door. So another telltale sign, you haven't taken a decent holiday where you have been able to disconnect from your phone, and you're still checking emails and checking in on the staff, and you know, if it's been more than 12 months since you've had a holiday like that, that's probably another sign as well that you need us.
Yeah. All things that I'm sure resonate with people listening, either in their current state or things that they've experienced. So for those listening that their ears are perking up, they're saying, I'm experiencing some or all of those things. What is the starting point? How can they start to systematically get themselves unblocked from being the bottleneck in the business?
The first thing that you need to do is get very clear on what are the first 10 to 15 systems that you're going to go to work on, because there's an infinite number of things that you can document. And when I say systems, I just use the word systems to really simplify the language. There's SOPs and standard operating procedures, processes, workflows, checklists, like all of these different terms. And they all do have sort of different definitions, but when it boils down to it, and when I think about a system, it's just the series of steps that, when followed, create a consistent outcome. And it's about identifying the core tasks in your business to deliver your primary product or service. And let's find your best practice and how is that done. So we identify the 10 to 15 systems, and remembering that just because we might not document something doesn't mean it's going to magically stop happening in your business. The key is to first just figure out what things do you really want done to a certain standard or a certain way. And that's where you start. So step number one is to identify those 10 to 15 systems. And the best exercise I've got to do that, I call it the critical client flow. And it's just mapping the linear journey, the end-to-end experience from capturing someone's attention through to answering that inquiry, selling them, onboarding them, delivering the core product or service, and getting them to come back. You map that out on a one page and you just capture what is most probable, what is most likely to happen, not every single variation. Keep it very high level, and that's the starting point. And then that helps you to go, ooh, where in this is there pain? Like sometimes you can go, ooh, if I got 10 times as many customers, I know that the onboarding breaks. Okay, well, let's go to work on your onboarding.
Yeah. So this actually answers a question I was going to touch on, which is, you know, how do you think about which area of the business to focus on first? And I'm sure that you've seen this. I've definitely seen this as people start building a lot of systems, but they start trying to backfill other areas. But it sounds like your thesis is probably the right place to start is focusing on client delivery and the client experience, because my sense is that that is probably the thing that if it's coil, the more it happens, then psychologically, it's going to be very difficult to scale the business.
Yeah, as far as like where to start, and there's lots of different methodology. So I've seen people say, start with the easiest task, start with the hardest task, start with the tasks you can offshore, start with the tasks that buy you back time. Like there's all of these different ways to do it. But when I think about it, I go, business is about delivering on a promise for your customer, and you need to deliver a core product or service. So if we systemize how the business makes money and remove key person dependency and mean that we can deliver that product or service without worrying who's doing it, then once the cash flow comes in, you can actually solve just about any other problem in business, because you can hire more staff, you can get the consultant who knows how to solve the problem. So I always go straight for, well, let's first make sure that the business makes money, because without that, you don't really have a business. And it's almost like step number one. That's like the first milestone. Later on, we do then start to think about each of the different departments and applying the 80-20 rule to each department. What are the 20% of the systems that deliver the most important result for that department? And then we go to work on that. But you have to work in sprints because there's a huge number of things you could document and you very quickly get overwhelmed. You're much better off going, what are the first 10 systems I'm going to focus on? And I'm only going to focus on those for the next 90 days.
Yeah. So we got a lot. I've got a lot of questions to ask, but I want to talk about, okay, now we've identified those top 10 things. We've got the first thing that we want to document. What next?
So the next thing is to understand that your business already kind of works and that you don't need to go buy some guru's magical system or process or whatever. If you fit that criteria I talked about right at the start and you've got some traction and you've got some clients, your business is kind of already working. The biggest wins you're going to get is just by making it repeatable and removing that key person dependency. So the next step is actually, once you know what those 10 to 15 systems are you want to start with, is to say, who on your team already knows how to do that thing to a good standard? Well, Bob knows how to handle that incoming inquiry pretty well, and he can qualify it and connect it with the salesperson. Great. Well, let's put Bob's name next to that, and let's find out what Bob's doing there. Okay, well, Jenny is great at onboarding new clients. What are the questions that she's asking? And we basically find who on the team knows how to do the thing to a good enough standard. And we'll look to extract that out of their brain. Because if we can bring everybody up to that standard, if we can make everybody repeatable and consistent on that, you don't need the best world-class systems straight out of the gate. You just got to do something consistently.
That is such a good insight because I've seen that trip a lot of people up where once they start to design the process, that also becomes the forcing function where they realize all of a sudden that the process isn't that good. And now all of a sudden they block their ability to just get a system in place and then iterate by saying, well, let's redesign this whole process at the same time that we're documenting, because what's the point of documenting it if we're going to change it anyway? That can be very counterproductive.
With that as well, adding to that is the business owner tends to then want to be involved with everything if we're re-engineering, because then they want to design it just the way that they like it. But the business owner is busy. They've got a million other priorities. Systems are always important. They're never urgent. So, okay, well, now it's on the to-do list. We'll get to it someday, one day. Whereas we're much better off just going, if we just capture what this person is doing, we can completely remove the business owner from the process and or at least significantly reduce the input required from them, which then just gets the ball rolling. And that's oftentimes the biggest thing with process, is that you just have to get started. Most people are, you know, very weak in terms of process. They've never been into the process gym and lifted any weights or anything, and they're trying to go straight to the heaviest weights rather than starting off doing a few squats first just to kind of get some reps up.
Now, there is a flip side to this that I think I'd be remiss if we didn't touch on, which is there is a cost to systems, and they do actually slow down the speed of iteration and they create operational drag. And so there is the pushback or the experience that I've had that's interesting with this is I make the mistake of documenting something that is immature, that is likely to change, that's not currently working, and doing it at way too high a level of detail. So now the task of actually making iterations on that process is made harder than it needs to be. How do you think about approaching creating systems in areas of the business that are still very early in their maturity and we know are going to have a lot of fluctuation and change as we find what the right process is, or as we find ways to close in on the standards that aren't currently being met yet?
Firstly, you want to think about whom is going to be completing this task and to what level of detail are they going to need to complete it to a good level? And things like, how frequently are you going to be replacing this particular role and those sorts of things, especially when you're getting started out, because you're not going to get a huge amount of leverage from over documenting something where you're probably going to be the person who's doing a good amount of it. And then you put all of that extra detail in. So generally speaking, and I think from the digital agency perspective, you want to systemize around, there's a whole bunch of things that just need to happen functionally. And going into extra detail there, issuing out invoices or the way that you onboard the clients, all of those types of things that are a little bit more well-worn, less likely to change, you can put a little bit more effort into that over documentation or extra documentation. If it's something that might be more creative or brand new, chances are it's going to be handled by a more senior team member with more skill anyway. So they're not going to need as much detail. So you make things a little bit more flexible or a little bit more high level checklist so that you're figuring out, well, what are the order of things? And let's just start off with what I call an overview process first. And then later on, you can create the more detailed sub processes. So you're right, this whole process is very much an organic process and you're never actually done. Very rarely do you document a process and then go, okay, I've now documented that. I'll never have to think about it again. It's like, it's a constant change in the work culture where the team thinks in process and improves process as we go.
Do you want some free resources to help you measure and improve your profitability? If you do, then I want to tell you about our agency profitability toolkit, which you can grab absolutely free in the show notes or by heading to paraquito.com/toolkit. It's packed with training videos, cheat sheets, templates, and all kinds of other great resources to help you start measuring and improving the essential metrics that are going to drive better profitability in your business. And it's helped thousands of other agencies around the world do the same. So I want to encourage you to go and grab a copy of that. And if you'd rather get in the fast lane and just have our team of experts guide you through the process of measuring and improving your profitability, then I want to encourage you to apply for a consultation at paraquito.com. And with that, I want to thank you again for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the episode and I'll let you get back to it. Yeah, and you alluded to something that was a big unlock for me as we were struggling through this. We got all on the process train. We started over documenting things that really were not in a place where they needed to be documented that well. And the unlock was a friend of mine sharing something with me, which was, you know, a standard operating procedure versus standards. And the most important thing, if it's an area of the business where you don't actually know exactly how you're going to get to the outcome, is to just first document the outcome and say, well, we don't know what the process is, but at the end, these things should be true. And that was such a light bulb moment for me because to your point, when you have a senior person on the team and you trust that they're going to be able to figure that out, that's the most important thing for them to have clarity on is alignment on what am I actually trying to accomplish and what should be true about whatever process I come up with. And the added benefit of that is often because they have a lot more autonomy, the buy-in level onto that process is so much higher when they eventually do figure out a way to get it done. And then you can start to make that more rigid. So that really resonated with me because it was reflective of one of the kind of big unlocks that I had around this through my own journey.
I remember getting a similar unlock from hearing an interview with Reed Hastings from Netflix, and they went on the process path. They got bitten by the bug and said, oh, we're going to systemize everything. This is early days Netflix. And he said, we're going to dummy proof everything, document everything to super minute detail, and we're going to have everything just dummy proof. And then he said, we got to the end of it. And then the only thing was only dummies wanted to work here. And you can over engineer this and go too far. And a lot of people, they think a systemized business is McDonald's because that's the poster child for systemization. And we've been talking about it for years, but there's not very many people listening to this podcast right now that run a hamburger business. And they probably haven't been systemizing for 60 years. So one, you don't run a hamburger business. And two, they've been doing it for so long. Don't look at what they've got and then think, oh, that's the way that it needs to be done. Like, you're going to hire intelligent people and there's certain knowledge that you're going to want them to have. We don't need to tell them how to suck eggs on certain things. We just need to give them those standards that you were talking about.
Awesome. So we've talked about first identifying the first 10 to 15 processes and thinking about that through the lens of the customer journey and the things that are most likely to happen. We've then talked about mapping who on the team has a process or, you know, knows how to do those things well. And if we don't have that person documenting the standards that need to be achieved, so then whoever we task to that at least has clarity on what to do. Where do we go from there? Let's say we've identified that first process. We know who is responsible for getting it done and knows how to do it well. How do we then turn that into something that can create the outcome that we're looking for?
Yeah. The next step is to extract that information from the brain of that key knowledgeable worker. And just like all of your best team members, like you, you're busy, they're busy. So sometimes just saying to a team member, document your process, they'll go, sure, I'll put it on my to-do list and get to it once I've done these 100 other things you've got me to do that seem more pressing and more important. So that's the reality for trying to ask team members to document process. So what I found for this stage is there's two little hacks that you can add in here. One is to understand it's a two-person process. We call them a systems champion. You need someone on your team who really owns process and becomes the gatekeeper of, I say gatekeeper, but it's everybody's job, but they oversee it, and it's who the buck stops with, and they help to support team members. And what happens is you have the knowledgeable team member either with the support of the systems champion or on their own record themselves doing the task live in the moment, whether that's a screen capture, whether that's on their phone if it's in the field, or a GoPro or whatever. Just record it happening, no matter how bad it is, warts and all. Don't do it as you're doing it. Don't have to stage it or anything like that. If it's a 10-minute video, great. If it's a 3-hour video, great. That's fine. Just get something down. That's version number one. And then the systems champion can actually take that recording, transcribe it, and writing process is actually, it's never been easier in the history of mankind because of AI tools and things like that. You can transcribe videos, feed that transcript into something like ChatGPT, and ask it to write you draft number one of the process. And then the systems champion tidies it up a little bit, then sends it back to the knowledgeable worker and says, hey, thanks for that video. I've pulled out the key steps. Can you just review it and tell me if I missed anything or if you have any suggestions? And that becomes version number one. So the aim of the game is, how do we make this as easy as possible for your smart team members to get this out of their head and then stored into a central location? Because we're just building up the business brain where all of this knowledge is going to exist. And the last thing I would suggest for that systems champion is to develop, we call it a system for creating systems, but it's just the workflow that they go through. Like they need, a systems champion needs to know, how do we record? Where do we save? Where do I go to get it transcribed? What does a good process for us look like? What does my review process look like in getting sign off? And how do we finish up once I've got a process, grab that link, and then go put it into the project management platform or the task jobs management platform? Like you need to make sure the point at which the task is assigned to do that particular task, there is then a link to the system. But that third step we're talking about really is just, how do we get it out of the heads of the team member?
Yeah. Okay. Excellent stuff. Love this idea of the systems champion. That accountability, I think, is big, because you're absolutely right. This idea of document that process, and what we're about to talk about, keep that process up to date, is very easy to slide down the priority list as an important but not urgent thing. So assuming we have some people on the call or on this podcast listening that, like me, got to a place where, okay, we've built all of these systems and they're here, but then they get stuck at this place of, the problem is nobody's following them. They don't know where to look for them. We forget that they even exist. So how do we then drive adoption of these systems and make sure that they're actually creating the intended value in the business?
There's a couple of key steps with this. The first thing is, you obviously need to have the process. Then the process needs to be readily accessible and obvious at the point at which tasks are getting assigned. So we talk about a project management platform. Asana, Trello, Teamwork PM, Basecamp. I mean, it doesn't really matter. The tool doesn't matter at all. The key is to say when someone is assigned a task that the system is linked to in that task. So that way it's clear there's some level of here is my expectation on how this task will be complete. And if the task isn't completed to an appropriate standard, you can say, well, you didn't follow the process. Next time I make sure you've got the process open because we have a way of doing things here. Like that's first, like you want to remove the chance for a team member to say, yeah, but I didn't know. Or, oh, I didn't realize we had that process. I didn't realize that was the step. Or like we need to get rid of that. That's part of it. There needs very clear accountability. So that's part of it. Then we need to start to build a culture of systems and processes. And this is actually the hardest bit. Like it's actually much easier now, like I said, to document process. Getting the team to follow it then is the hardest bit. And the biggest resistance always happens with your existing team. The new team members that come on board, this actually gets easier. And as your team grows, because you'll develop an onboarding process and you'll introduce your systems thinking approach from day one. And the first time someone learns how to do a task, they're going to learn through this system or process. And if they've got a question, they're going to go back and have a look at the system and the process. And we train them to do that before they go to their supervisor to reduce the amount of time. So again, this ceases to become a problem the longer you stick with this. The hard bit is at the start getting over the hump. So we need to start to, and this is why the systems champion is so important. We have to start to build evidence in the team that this is the way that we do things here. And that systems champion mentions it on team meetings. They pop a note into Slack when a new system is created. They celebrate when a team member follows process or improves process. And you give out awards to the team to say, hey, the MVP for this month goes to Jenny because she did this particular system thing. And we need to talk to our supervisors and department heads and say, hey, we need to get these core processes followed. And we on the team meetings, we bring up the critical client flow and we say, hey, here's this linear journey that the customer goes through and here are the key processes. And hey, team member, this is where you sit and this is why it's important for the person who's going to do the work after you that you get it right. Because you make their job harder for this and this and this piece because you're right here. And this is what happens before you. And like it's a whole lot of that conversation needs to go on, especially in the early days, because you need to get the team on board and you have to figure out who's resistant and who's not. Some people over time will also self-select out because what tends to happen is we are creating a culture of transparency and accountability. And some team members, they don't want you to know how long certain tasks take or what they're doing, or and they create this little black box around them because that key person dependency in their mind equals job security because you can't get rid of them because they do all these important things and you don't really know what they're doing. So part of this changing of the culture is to let the team member know how process helps them and serves them. This helps them do their job better. So there's a lot of nuance here, and it will depend on your team. Some teams I've just seen go all in, but other teams will have resistant team members. And especially in the creative space, creative digital agency, sometimes there's resistance because there's these preconceived notions that systems will remove creativity. So you do need to commit to it and stick through it.
It's fair to say that getting the team to adopt process is a process and not an event.
Yes.
I had to do it. It was a birdie putt. We had to go there.
I like it.
So I want to hit you with another hardball here a little bit, which is there is a flip side to this that I've experienced, which is I'll preface this by saying, I think another way that we create buy-in with the team that you mentioned kind of inherently, but has not been explicitly called out is I think the brilliance of identifying the person that knows how to do this well and having them work with the systems champion to build the system is that that very naturally creates a lot of buy-in. It's not us documenting a process and imposing it on them. So that should help a lot. However, there is a flip side to this with some people, it won't be everyone, where they now feel a level of investment in that process, and it actually creates resistance to change. And that can be a really challenging thing to work through, where now somebody doesn't want to change things, or they feel offended, or they feel a sense of defensiveness, or they feel that their stability in their job and their predictability and their clarity is threatened when we say, hey, we need to make some changes. And it can create a lot of tension in the team. How do you address that? And more broadly, the ongoing maintenance now of making the changes that are necessary to the systems once they're built?
Yeah. A lot of what you're speaking to here is around culture. And that's why I think Drucker said culture each strategy for breakfast, I think was the quote. But the idea that at the core of this in small business is the culture and the people. And there's always going to be nuances. But the aim is we need to be able to create a safe space for team members to understand that this is how we do things here. And this is where values from companies are important to say, well, you know, maybe flexibility is one of your values. And then as part of that, we understand that process and the business changes and evolves, and we must change and evolve with it. Now, we've just come off the back of a huge event with COVID, which actually made it very easy for people to adopt change because they were experiencing change everywhere in their life. And we're still feeling a little bit of a hangover with that at the moment. So you can make the case for we need to make these changes to make the business stronger and more secure, so your positions are more secure. The way that we move up in our organization is you capture your process and delegate it down to less skilled, lower cost team members, and that frees you up to work on higher value tasks. Part of this process is we're going to need to evolve and change. So it's creating the space for that, having the discussion for that, helping the person to understand why you're making the suggested change. Like oftentimes, like the way that we think about when a process gets changed, and this comes to what you were saying, well, how often should we be changing? Some people have this approach where, every 12 months we review a process and we give it a once over and then we update the date stamp and that's it, we're done for this year. I'm more of the opinion, because I work with a lot of small business, that it's about updating as we go, as issues pop up, because you're going to have so many different processes that the best thing that you can do is an issue pops up, it goes onto an issue list, depending on how often you're meeting with your team, and like have a point, maybe it's once a month, every couple of weeks, where you review some of the key issues that are going on. And then you think about how do we solve that at the system level. So for us, we create this approach, either if it's really small and you're the process owner, then you jump in there and make the adjustment as you go. If it's more large and needs some sort of consultation, well, maybe there's a forum for how this is done. Every business is a little bit different, but you want to create the mechanism that captures errors and creates the space to say it's okay for us to improve process. Hmm.
So one last question before we wrap up here. There is the next level of scale where, let's say, the business is growing past, 8-10 people, and now we're starting to have to install our first level of management. 25-30 people, we're starting to install another level of management. And now we have to build a culture of not only like building systems and having people follow them, but having the team now do that and work through the team and have them be thinking in this way. So do you have any practical tips for helping leadership develop this systems thinking and also become stewards of creating, maintaining systems within their own teams and doing that with a high level of autonomy?
Yeah. This is the topic for my next book. The first book, Systemology, was written for the business owner to make the case for systemizing, and here's the process for doing it. My next book is called Systems Champion, and it's for that role that we were talking about and specifically what they should be thinking about and doing to help build this. So the way I think about it is the Systems Champion is effectively the department head of the systems department. If we imagined just like sales, marketing, HR, finance, operations, management, if you imagine all of them as department, I think in terms of systems as having its own department and the systems champion is that department head. They kind of work with other department heads and team members and help to support them to make this possible. But to give them tools to bring it front and center for the team, like running the little mini segments on a team meeting, having a monthly newsletter or update that goes out and says, you know, here's a few things, or spotting some YouTube videos that speak to a particular topic around process and then sharing that in with the team. In the early days, we just need to build up those reps and just get little pieces of evidence. What ends up happening at some point, there's a turning point I call once you reach minimum viable systems. That's where systems touch all aspects of the business and every single department. And there's a turning point that happens there where the team goes, this is how we do things here. And it just becomes part of the way that things are done and the way that everybody's inducted and trained. But it's quite a lot of work to get to that point. So we kind of have all of these little tools and strategies to build up the evidence to then get to the point where, this is our particular approach. But building in a lot of this thinking into the onboarding is the hack. Like if I had to pick one area out of all of it, it would be to say, because you were talking about growing and scaling, which means there's a good chance you're going to be adding on new team members, is thinking about what is your onboarding process and how have you built in systems thinking into that onboarding process. Everything from, and even the step before, how do you recruit and look for people who resonate with process? What questions do you ask in the interview process to make sure that they connect with process? How in your job ad can you share some systems and processes that show here are the types of process that you might be following as part of this particular job? When they onboard, how to let them know this is where we store things and this is how you move up in the organization. All those things that we talked about, you want to build that into that onboarding process at the start. That's probably one of my biggest hacks. There's a lot of other things you can do, but that has one of the biggest moving needle effects.
That makes a lot of sense, especially in the context of scale, like you said, because new people are coming in and usually there's going to be some turnover as well. So at some point, you know, everybody in the organization or almost everybody in the organization will have gone through that process. So great tip. And with that, David, I'm sure there's lots of listeners that want to learn more about you, want to consume more of your content, want to get a copy of the book. Where should we be sending them in the show notes so that they can learn more?
Best to just head over to Amazon, search Systemology. You'll find the book there. There's an audible version as well. If you're listening to this, you like to listen to stuff. So there's the audio version there for you. And then if you want to go a bit deeper, just systemology.com. And from there, I link to my YouTube channel and I've got some extra resources that I'll be able to help you out as well.
Excellent. So if you scroll down, if you're listening, scroll on down, we'll have a link to the book and a whole bunch of other links to David's social channels, a bunch of free resources. So check all that out in the show notes. And with that, David, thank you so much for being here with us today, early in the morning in Melbourne, Australia. We really appreciate it. Hey, thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you've ever found yourself thinking, man, I get so much value from this podcast, I wish there was something I could do to return the favor. Well, today's your lucky day because you can leave us a review wherever you're listening to this, and it is incredibly helpful. Of course, if you haven't grabbed a free copy of the Agency Profit Toolkit, go and get that. It's got tons of free resources to help you improve your profitability. If you're looking to get in the fast lane and get help from experts to improve your profitability and measure your most important metrics, then apply for a consultation at parakeeto.com. We'd love to chat with you and figure out how we can help. With all of that, thank you so much for being a listener, and we will see you on the next episode.